Hey everybody, welcome back to Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast. This is episode 206. This is the only weekly Paul McCartney podcast where you can get your fix of Paul, solo, Beatles, whatever we're talking about, Paul. And as you can see, we've got some guests here. But first, I want to introduce you to my partner in crime. He's my backwards traveler. He is the other leg. He's Andy Nichols. Andy, my friend, what is going on?
Hi, partner. Doing okay. Fighting off some medical issues again. It's like the winter and spring of my discontent, is to borrow a January 1969 term, but it's not, hasn't been fun this spring.
Okay.
But doing okay and really, really excited to be here for 206 to, for the first time, be on here with somebody who I've been listening to for a long time as well, and I'll let you introduce him next.
Yeah, this man is a legend. I mean, he's been around for a while. I mean, he's been around at the Fest for Beatle fans pretty much since the beginning. He's been working on Beatle Fan Magazine pretty much since the beginning. He was a co-host on Things We Said Today. And don't forget about his book, Changing Times, 101 Days That Shaped a Generation. He is Al Sussman. Al, thank you. And how are you doing? And welcome back.
Good, guys. Thanks very much for inviting me.
You got it. And then last but definitely not least, we brought in the young whippersnapper here. And you know him from the show Fans on the Run. You know him from the Fest for Beatle Fans as well. He's been a mainstay there for the last couple of years, right? You've been going there every single one. And Ethan Alexanian, it's, you know, we love you. You've done many great thumbnails for us in the past, and welcome back to the show, buddy. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, and then today we're gonna do something something different that we haven't done before. And you know, we got four generations of fans here. We got you know, the boomers, you got the Gen X, we got the millennial, and we got the what are you, Gen Z there, Ethan?
Gen Z.
Yeah, Gen Z. And we're gonna discuss what are we gonna call this? The US versus the UK rubber stole here. We're gonna talk about the history of the US albums, why they're different. But first, Andy, you've got a little two-leg swag on your shirt there. Talk about that, and then let people know how they can get that if they want.
Yeah, well, we have a brand new batch of two-leg buttons right here, and we got them in a few days ago, and they are available. If you'd like one, send us an email at twolegspodcast@gmail.com, and we'll sort out the details and get one over to you. But they're nice and kind of taking some inspiration from Talk More Talk and the nice swag that Kit gives out. Now we have some too. And the shirts too as well, which we're kind of taking new orders on them because we are all out of the ones that we did have at the fest. So a couple people have reached out to us about new sizes, and we're going to, when we get about another 10 or so, then we'll do another run. So stay tuned for those as well. And thanks to those who bought and supported those.
Right. Very good. Now, a little bit of news today, being what, Tuesday? What's the date? Tuesday the 9th. We've got this upcoming release, and this is Dolly Parton. Ever since she got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame last year, she's talked about doing a rock record. And now we just got some details, and we just found out that Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr are going to be on her cover of Let It Be. So, who knows if Paul is going to share vocals with that with Dolly, but Dolly is an icon, and she's got so many guests on here, including Steve Perry, Sting. You've got Peter Frampton on here. You got Joan Jett and others, Debbie Harry. So, you know, are you guys into things like this, or I mean, are you curious to see what Paul is going to be doing? And Paul and Ringo are going to be doing on a cover of Let It Be. Al?
Absolutely. Like you say, Dolly is an absolute icon. She's a legend. And, she probably should have been elected to the Hall long before last year. And but it's
Right.
nice to see that she's doing a pop record, say, and so I'm definitely looking forward to this.
Okay,
Yeah,
cool.
I'll give it a good listen. Absolutely. Anytime that we're getting any kind of activity recorded between Beatles, it's got to be something we check out and
That too,
listen to
for
it.
sure.
I feel like we're entering a period here where a lot of musical icons have we've lost in the last few weeks and months. So anytime we can get anything from Paul and Ringo, it's going to be a blessing on a recording. So yeah, let's absolutely check it out.
Cool. Ethan, Dolly Parton fan over there, or
Not particularly, but I'll give it a listen.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just curious to see if Paul's gonna help on vocals with this cover, if it's just gonna be Paul and Ringo just playing bass and drums, and let Dolly take all the vocals herself. So I'll be curious to hear it, but whether or not I buy it, I mean, I don't know if I'll buy it or not, but I'm sure it'll be up on YouTube and we can all listen to it there or streaming, however, everybody listens to their free music, if you will.
Yeah.
Anyway, but like I said, let's get to the meat and potatoes of the show, because being in this this Beatles circle and for a while now, I know so many people like Al that grew up with the US albums, and Andy, you'll talk about growing up with the US albums as well. And then, Ethan and I will too. But there's another generation that may have started in the 80s, late 80s, that didn't have the US albums, unless they handed it down, but for me, starting to buy the stuff in 87, as the CDs were coming out, it was just like, yeah, exactly. The 87, 88 CDs, and then it's the UK only. The US stuff pretty much goes obsolete, unless you're at a used record store and you find them that way. But Al, as someone that was listening to pretty much right off the bat, 64, you talked about seeing them on the Ed Sullivan Show last time you were on. Talk about that early experience and the fact that you probably did had no idea that there and on the other side of the pond, these albums were totally different.
Well, we did to some extent, only because of the fact that radio stations, top 40 radio, they just could not get enough Beatles material. And so when there were differences in the track lists of the British albums and of course the various different US configurations and all that, if there were any differences, most of the big top 40 stations, WABC in New York or WLS in Chicago or KHJ in LA, would try to at all costs to get a copy of the record that had that particular track or those tracks. And that certainly was the case with Rubber Soul, because I can remember in early December of 65, one of the two New York top 40 stations were able to get a copy of the UK album and played all four of the different tracks. And of course that lasted for about, I don't know, about 12 hours or so, until Nat Weiss sent out the requisite cease and desist letter. And then that was it until February, when the Nowhere Man single came out. But also it's interesting, kind of people who kind of listened, I don't know if this was the case with you guys. I don't know if you were kind of introduced to the albums, to the UK albums, in in chronological order, or if you skipped around. But obviously in 65, we didn't know about the fact that the Help soundtrack album was only half of the album that right. had been released in England. And so the kind of the shock, if you will, of the musical leap between the side of Help that we got and Rubber Soul was pretty was really interesting. But for instance, when Beatles 6 came out in June, I remember hearing Tell Me What You See, which was of course one of the tracks that would be on side two of the British Help album, and thinking, wow, that's interesting. That's different from, you know, it's not your typical Beatles sound, if you will. It was different. So we were getting like little clues here and there.
Mm. Okay. Interesting. Andy, you you know, your father was a Beatle fan. You know, is. And then now yeah,
it is still. Right?
Yeah. You've become a fan like a lot of people, you know, your age or younger or older. I mean, you became a fan by, you know, relatives or friends introducing you to the Beatles. And then I think would say most of the time it was the US Beatles that they got introduced to, right?
Without a doubt, you know, it was what I was exposed to. It was the mid 80s, like around 86, 87 when the CDs first came out. I was too young for CDs. You know, I was only like 4 or 5. So I didn't really, all I had was his records to go by. So the US Capitol, you know, Rubber Soul was my first exposure to it. But I have that unique perspective because, yeah, that was my first exposure to it, but I was also young enough for the CD generation. So I was very early on like, wow, there's a different version here to get used to. So I didn't get so, so close to the first one, you know, the US one, where I was like, oh, this is the only one that I know, which some fans, some first generation fans, you know, were just go by that and that's it. I really have great appreciation for both. Because I was so young enough to get to hear it on vinyl. And then, you know, in the early 90s, I think in the early 90s is when I picked this up. So I got it. And, you know, can appreciate them from both for what they are. Yeah, so it's a little bit different.
Yeah. Ethan, you as well. I mean, you've got older relatives. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the Canadian albums almost pretty much mirrored the U.S. albums, correct?
At first, they didn't. But okay. By the time Something New came out in 64, the Canadians were bullied into stepping in line with the American releases. So from Something New onwards, we got the American configurations, with the exception of Let It Be.
Okay. And then you were introduced to the US and both pretty much at the same time.
Yeah. So I think the first way I listened to it was, and just for the record, I'm not condoning piracy here. My dad, when I first got into the Beatles, he bestowed upon me a thumb drive of illicitly obtained 2009 remasters. And so that's how I really got used to hearing the music. Although, with the earlier Beatles stuff, you know, with Beatles 65 and before, I got to know him through the first volume of the Capitol albums box, because we just had that on our computer. But and then also the first copy of Rubber Soul I owned was the American or Canadian version of the record. So that's how I first heard it on vinyl.
You know, growing up in Michigan, my parents were Motown junkies. You know, they could care less about the Beatles. I mean, my mom and dad told me, you know, I mean, they remember, you know, watching them, you know, on Ed Sullivan and just thinking, it was like, you know, give me the Temptations or the Four Tops, you know. So I didn't really have you know, those the U.S. albums from my parents, because they didn't buy them. And then by the time that I've became a fan, the U.S. were pretty much obsolete with the UK CDs. Now this is it. I mean, this is what they wanted and how they, how these albums were supposed to be. So then that, on the CD, that's what released. Also cassette as well. I think I've said this before, but I think the only US album I ever really remember seeing back in the late 80s, early 90s was the Hey Jude album. I don't know why that was. Maybe because it was just, it wasn't related to any other, UK album, right? It was pretty much its own thing. Just a collection of stuff that wasn't on any other
Capitol album.
Yeah, it was Capitol. But didn't it have an Apple?
Yeah, it didn't
have the Apple on the, sure. on the label?
Absolutely. And some of those Apple labels say the Beatles again on them. They don't say Hey Jude. Some of them say the Beatles again, which is what it was originally released as.
Originally called, right. Yeah.
So slowly, into the 90s, then that's when I realized that, there were U.S. albums. And, you showed that box set, Andy, a couple minutes ago. Yeah. I mean, and I'm just like, I'm looking at the track listing, right? And I'm just like, you gotta be kidding me. What? Only 12 songs. What do you mean? And Help's got all these weird different things on it. Yep. And it's not the Help that I was introduced to. But it was different. It was just something I couldn't get used to, just because I had spent, the last, 6-7 years, with the UK stuff. So I mean, it was very foreign to me. So, but Al, why were we getting different copy? Why were we getting different, track listings in the US here and not, what they originally wanted over in the UK?
The British albums customarily had 14 tracks.
Right.
Whereas the American albums customarily had 12, because I believe the royalty, if I'm remembering correctly, the royalties were distributed differently. And and plus also in England, there was a tendency among a lot of the, especially the major artists, not to put their singles on the albums, so that you would have 14 fresh tracks. Now they didn't, of course they didn't have the same philosophy toward those albums that the Beatles did. A lot of those early 60s British LPs were, maybe there might be one hit single on there and then 10 pieces of junk or 13 pieces of junk. it's a royalty situation. That was the reason why. But that also gave Capitol the license, if you will, to start cranking out these compilation albums. Things like the Beatles' second album and Something New and Beatles 6 and Yesterday and Today.
I mean, you had...
Because if you held back two from every album and then you take A and B sides, there's your other American album, because that's how they did it.
The
knockout...
There's your Yesterday and Today.
They knocked out 6 albums in 64 alone. That's crazy to think.
Right.
And I have to say that the UK, this is where the UK, you might say that they did right by the fans by not putting a single on the album. They gave you value for money. They gave you 14 tracks, and that was it. And the single was separately, and that was the way to do it. That's generally how they did it. They wanted to do take care of their fans. If you couldn't afford the LP, you bought the single. That was it.
Right. Obviously something like A Hard Day's Night or Help, you had to put the title song on there, right. But in most cases they usually tried not to put a single on the album until, I guess, what, Yellow Submarine and Eleanor Rigby.
Mm-hmm.
Now, wasn't there also a UA album? Wasn't the Hard Day's Night or Help on a
yeah,
UA?
Hard Day's Night.
Hard yeah, Day's Night is the, yeah.
Right, that was the official soundtrack.
Actually, then there was seven albums then in 64, including that, right? Because you wouldn't include that in the Capitol Records then, right?
Well, not then, but now it's in the U.S. albums in the blue box. It's on that now. So I guess, you know, Capitol EMI has claimed ownership of that, but it was a UA because on this, when this run first came out, it was not included in this.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Capitol did have the rights to issue the U.S. version or the United Artists version of A Hard Day's Night since, I believe, like 1979, 1980.
Hey, yeah, hey, I was going to say early, because you've seen early 80s pressings on Capitol of the UA cover. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's true.
Interesting.
Yeah, because I know it was sometime in the 70s that that the Capitol absorbed Liberty and UA.
That's also around the time where you kind of saw Let It Be added back into the Beatles albums in print.
Okay.
Exactly.
Al, can you kind of take us back then, set the scene a little bit in 65? I mean, what were you hearing a lot of? I mean, talk about the, you know, the folk. I mean, there was the folk and then there was also folk rock. I mean, talk about that era. Psychedelia, was maybe just creeping in with Rubber Soul.
Just a little tiny bit, but see, I'm not real objective when it comes to 1965 because I consider that to be the single greatest year in the history of rock and roll. And it was a year of really a great change. You know, early in the year you have the Beach Boys releasing an album called The Beach Boys Today that had on side one it had a lot of their, you know, their relatively current hits.
Side two's better.
And it had on there some of the musically some of what Brian Wilson was beginning to experiment with, which and then more so on Summer Days and Summer Nights, the next studio album, and all of that set the stage for Pet Sounds the next year. Dylan released Bringing It All Back Home, which was half acoustic and half electric. The next album was Highway 61 Revisited, which had like a Rolling Stone, and that was the beginning of, you know, what came to be called folk rock. Okay. And you've got the first, the Love and Spoonful's first album. You've got the Byrds, who, you know, in the opinion of a lot of people, invented folk rock. You know, with Mr. Tambourine Man and their version of All I Really Want to Do, and then Turn, Turn, Turn. And there was so much else. It was also, I mean, it was maybe the peak, although probably 66 you'd have to go with as the peak of, like, you know, the golden soul music. You know, so it was an incredible time. Plus you had the kind of the American answer to the British invasion, with all of these new bands that were beginning to emerge. So it was an incredible year. And yet even with all of that, though, the Beatles were still on. In fact, the Beatles were probably never again as popular as they were, say, in the summer of 65.
Okay.
I think that's
yeah. Well, I mean, with the British invasion too was going on, right? I mean, the Stones were becoming a
thing. Oh yeah,
reckoning with, you know, the Stones had. Go ahead, Al. Finish.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, just, you know, we mentioned the Stones. They had what in many quarters was the number one record of the year. And Satisfaction. You know, it had taken them a year really to really kind of climb the mountain You know, it took him a longer time than it took, say, the Dave Clark Five or Herman's Hermits and some of the other bands. But that was, but they got to by mid 65, later in the year, they were absolutely the number two band in the world. Although it was, there was a big difference between number one and number two.
Right. Ethan, talk about a few of the other British Invasion bands that were coming on strong, hot on the heels of the Beatles.
Well, by 65, I think it's fair to say, or when I think of the British Invasion, I kind of think of it in waves. So the first wave, which was very, very Mersey beat. So you had Billy J. Kramer, you had Jerry and the Pacemakers, Freddie and the Dreamers, the Honeycombs, and then the Dave Clark Five. But by 65, you had groups like the Kinks, who were starting to have some success in America, the Yardbirds, and even groups like the Pretty Things.
Okay. Even the Who early. They didn't break America then.
Yeah. The Who indeed.
Okay. Cool. So we get the Rubber Soul. Now, a lot of these albums, we could, you know, probably do other shows on these other albums, you know, with the Beatles and Meet the Beatles, right? And then you got and all those the Hard Day's Night from there and here. You know, we could, but I think it's really Rubber Soul to me is the one that really starts to stand out. You know, it's a completely different feel. Andy, let's just talk about this for a second. You know, you're discovering both albums, right? And were you used to one or the other at this point in time, or what were you listening to more, you think, at that time?
I mean, in terms of the UK or US?
Yeah.
It's so tough because these track listings are programmed as like there's DNA, right? So like they just run off your head from UK, whether it's Drive My Car, you know, Norwegian Wood, You Won't See Me, or US, you know, I've Just Seen a Face. It really depends on your mood, I think, of what you want to hear, which is kind of how I listen to it now. If I'm in a folkier kind of mood, I'm going to put on the US one because I think that mood that Al so greatly talked about, that setting the stage there in 65, this US album continues that trend with that opening track. I firmly believe that. I think I've Just Seen a Face, and I think so what was I listening to? Probably more than the US, but as I've matured, more the UK. But I will tell you that I think that's what Brian Wilson heard, the American Rubber Soul, not the UK. Mm-hmm. That's what inspired him to go create Pet Sounds. In part of, and kind of Al said, he was already on that wavelength with side two of Beach Boys Today, which is a great record. Kiss Me Baby and old tracks like that are just, he was going in that direction anyway. So the U.S. Rubber Soul just continued and opened up the door for him to do that. So that's why, as you say, Tom, this one has to be the one that you talk about that way because it is so... It's polarizing and inspiring, and it's reached so many other people. We're not going to talk about the U.S. Revolver because we know that is clearly inferior.
Right. Al, talk about the anticipation for this album. I mean, you had the a big album with Help. You had the movie, and then Beatlemania is taking off, full throttle. And then the anticipation for Rubber Soul. I mean, were they playing? Was there any lead up? What were singles at the time leading up? Was it leading up to Rubber Soul, or was it just the album Rubber Soul? Because I'm kind of naive to the U.S. releases, if you will.
No, as a matter of fact, we can work it out in Day Tripper, and Rubber Soul were released on the same day. In early December 4th.
December 3rd. 3rd or 3rd. 4th. Yeah.
Of 65. And and then the single before that had been, the U.S. single before that had been Yesterday, which of course changed, you know, the whole ball game as far as the kind of the attitude that the establishment, the adult world, had toward had toward the Beatles.
Right.
It was, you know, it was, you know, so there was, and plus also, again, as I was saying before, we didn't, you know, we didn't have side two of Help here, of the British Help mm-hmm. album here, except for the couple of tracks that were on Beatles Six. So we didn't really know at that point that there were, that they were really changing and evolving. You know, there were little clues, like, you know, especially John Lennon's kind of Dylan influenced tracks, like, you know, I'm a Loser on Beatles 65, and of course you've got Hide Your Love Away on Help, things like that. But we really weren't prepared for a change as big as there was with Rubber Soul. Being, in fact, I remember playing it for some friends after I had gotten a copy when it first came out, and their reaction was not great. You know, it didn't, you know, they were used to what they considered to be, you know, kind of, you know, the real Beatles, you know, which was, you know, more pop, you know, Merseybeat, you know,
right.
you know, lots of harmonies, things like that. Right. And they didn't really, they weren't really ready for this. You know, what's
a sitar? Do you think that would have changed if Drive My Car was the lead off track?
No, I don't think so. And there's one myth that, you know, have to to smash. And that's this thing that I think that some people have said, was that the fact that I've Just Seen a Face and It's Only Love were put on, you know, the leading off the two sides, was definitely a clue that Capitol was trying to make this a folk rock album, which is nonsense, because people that were, you know, exactly, because the people that were running the music business in those days, you know, were basically, they were like 50 something cigar chomping, you know, businessmen who, you know, they wouldn't know folk rock if it hit them in the face.
No.
I wouldn't say Dave Dexter Jr. really had his ear to the ground when it comes to pop music. Or his replacement, whose names escape me.
Bill Miller, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, these were jazz guys. You know, they were into jazz, or, you know, or the classic vocalists at Capitol, Sinatra, Nat Cole, and Peggy Lee, people like that. You know, they were not into rock and roll, so there was no way that they were going to deliberately change the track listing to make it sound more folk rock. You know, that's now, silly.
Now, the UK and the US, they were released at the same time, or right around at the same time?
Within a couple of days.
I know the UK date is December 3rd, 1965, so the US has got to be within a few days.
But what I mean is, all the tracks that were, what I mean is, all the tracks that were, you know, on the UK, they were ready. I mean, they could have appeared on the US, you know, whereas the you know, those 64 albums, they were playing catch up, you know, right? I mean, they had all these tunes, because they didn't release a US album until 64. So you've got, you know, countless singles, and you know, B-sides, and then a couple albums. So they're playing catch up at this point in time.
Sure. But the one of the reasons why those four tracks were not on the US Rubber Soul, besides that whole royalty thing we were talking about before, the other reason was that Nowhere Man and What Goes On had already been designated to be the next single, because in those days it was the singles that were the pivot point rather than the album. You know, that would change with Sgt. Pepper, but that was still another year and a half down the road.
The money was in the singles.
So, Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So they right. so though at least two of those songs had already been designated, and then the two others, you know, were, you know, I think they were already looking toward a, you know, what like became Yesterday and Today.
Right. Yeah, because, you know, here it is. They already toured America at this point in time, right? So they wouldn't have played anything from Rubber Soul anyway. And then plus, then, you know, you talk about, you know, Nowhere Man getting pushed to was it 66 in the U.S.? Because it goes on Yesterday.
In February.
Right. Right. So, and then, you know, then they end up, you know, playing it during the 66 tour, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
But let's talk about the four tracks that are removed from the UK. And you're looking at Drive My Car, Nowhere Man, which you mentioned, Al, What Goes On, and If I Needed Someone. And I gotta tell you, if there, you know, if you're, you know, so making a so-called, you know, folk rock album, this is like the no-brainer that why wasn't this one on, you know, the album. Yep. Maybe you take Think For Yourself off, which is a more hard-edged song. You know, mm-hmm. Ethan, I mean, what do you think about these four tracks that are removed? I mean, were the right tracks that were removed, and what are your thoughts?
Well, you took the words right out of my mouth, because I was going to say, whatever the opposite of a stroke of genius was removing If I Needed Someone from the folk rock album, because, hey, if you want a folk rock album in the time of the Birds, then don't take away the song that was influenced by the Birds. That was like the Beatles' attempt at doing their own version of the Birds.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, especially since, especially since, you know, George owned up to the fact that, you know, he even had written to, as he was still called, Jim McGuinn, and said that, that, you know, the hook that I'm going to be using in this song, I've taken from, I think, what was it, The Bells of Rhymney, and I forget, there was another track. I forget, there was another track on the Mr. Tambourine Man album.
Chimes of Freedom?
It may have been Chimes of Freedom. I think it was. Yeah. So he even, you know, he owned up to it. So yeah, exactly. You know, that would be if they were going to do a, you know, have a folk rock album, you know, not putting If I Needed Someone on there was not a good move.
It's interesting to note, too, with that. So a song like that gets elbowed, right, off the American. But then you've got a track like Wait. Now, Wait's a great track. In My Life Ends, and you know it goes right into Wait. However, if you've read your Lewison talks about Wait. The Beatles were in a rush to get Rubber Soul finished. They were under the gun, and Wait was a leftover from the Help era, according to Lewison, in the recording sessions book. So when you listen to Wait in the context of the rest of the album, it's a little bit different than of the vibe of the rest of the album. So you could have scrapped Wait, you know, you could have put If I Needed Someone on the American one, and you could have elbowed Wait. You know, when you think about that, you know, interesting, because it was a left there. They were scrambling to finish the album. I do remember that, reading that in Lewison's right. recording sessions.
Interesting. Let's talk about the songs that Capitol did add to the Rubber Soul album, and that's I've Just Seen a Face, and it's Only Love. And like Al, like you said, both of those tracks open each side, and you know, it gives, you know, starting with I've Just Seen a Face, which kind of folksy, maybe a little, you know, a little bit, but to open, you know, the album with it, I you know, I'm still getting a little used to it as I've heard listened to the album now four or five times. What are your thoughts, Al, on I've Just Seen a Face opening this U.S. version?
I think it was perfect. It was it's strange that a track like that, which, you know, was kind of quote unquote relegated to side, you know, to the second side of the British Help album, was an absolutely perfect fit. to open Rubber Soul. No doubt about it. And actually, I kind of think it's a better opener than Drive My Car. Drive My Car is a great track.
Yeah, because I think sometimes Drive My Car gets poo-pooed on a little bit. Especially fans of the U.S. album, and Al, I mean, you said you got to listen to those tracks on the radio, right? During that time, someone, you know, DJ was
well,
able to get mo- the...
you know, w- well, once before, right. You know, before right. they were pulled off.
Okay.
You know, because I probably didn't hear right. Drive My Car a second time until, you know, until yesterday.
Today. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Andy, opening with I've Just Seen a Face. You're a fan?
Oh, 1,000. I totally agree with Al. Perfect album opener. And it is why the mood of the American Rubber Soul and I think the lovers of the album feel the way they do, because it's such a perfectly opening song. You know, it's got the perfect acoustic. You look at the album cover, you hear those chords open up, you know that the mood has been set. And you don't feel that. I don't feel that way when I hear Drive My Car. I just don't. I don't dislike Drive My Car, but I've Just Seen a Face as an album opener, comparing it to the middle of side two of the UK Help. No brainer.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it's a different feel. However, that's wasn't really the intention, right? I mean, putting I've Just Seen a Face here in the U.S., I mean, it gave this, the U.S. album, a completely different feel, right? I mean, you look, go ahead.
No, you're 1,000% right. And with age and time, I can now say that the UK Rubber Soul is the stronger album. It just is. And I can state that. But just for guilty pleasure reasons and listening to it as a piece of music, it sounds good. I know the stronger album is the UK album. I think everybody knows that. But listening to it in context, and especially like Al, who was there at the time and bought the album, listened to it, He feels the same way that I'm sure many people do.
Okay. Ethan?
So I'm a little conflicted when it comes to I've Just Seen a Face opening the record. For me personally, I heard the UK Help first before I heard the American Rubber Soul. So I was kind of used to knowing that song from the second half of Help. Which, actually, now that I'm on the subject of the second half of Help, I know famously George Harrison called Revolver and Rubber Soul parts 1 and 2, but I've always found the UK Help and the UK Rubber Soul to feel more like parts 1 and part 2.
No, interesting. And,
okay. I mean, it's a good opening for the American album, but I'm not sure I can forgive taking away Drive My Car, because to me that's a near perfect opener for a Beatle record.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, it is kind of really, you know, Andy, when I got to Jersey and then, we played the album, going to the fest. I mean, I was really blown away on how, I've Just Seen a Face felt as an opener. I really love that acoustic, the opening to that track. I mean, it's a song that I've always loved, but still in the back of my mind, I'm going, this is really weird, but it flows. I mean, that whole first side for me flows. I mean, when you talk about I've Just Seen a Face going into Norwegian Wood, I think that's a great 1-2 punch,
1-2-3 punch.
Well, yeah, you won't see me. Yeah. I think you'll think for yourself is might be kind of the thumb, that kind of sticks out a little bit, but even the word too, I mean, doesn't necessarily fit in my opinion. But then it ending with Michelle, I think is a nice touch. Side two. Now this is the one where, now listen, I love It's Only Love. I adore that song, but I don't think it has any place on this album. I think it just, I think it's a different feel. On the second side, and whereas I think if I needed someone, I think would have been a stronger, maybe.
Imagine that if happened, open up side two of the American. Yeah. Wow, that would have been a hell of an opener.
Right. But Al, It's Only Love. I mean, talk about that opening side two.
Well, I think it works because you're talking about a song that's on the same side within My Life. And, you know, right there, you're talking about two of the greatest love songs that John ever wrote.
Okay.
Thanks to me.
Fair. Right. Yeah. Ethan?
Again, I feel a little conflicted because It's Only Love is one of my favorite Beatles songs. I think it's, you know, it's definitely the highlight of side two of Help for me.
Mm.
And I think it's perfect as an opener to a side. However, it's a little, I would rather it have been the opener for side two of the British Help than opening side two of the American Rubber Soul. Because again, I feel like it feels slightly out of place.
Okay. Andy?
I can say with hindsight, it does slightly feel out of place now, having known the album so well, both versions and their incarnations. But I, at the time, I would love hearing that It's Only Love opening. You know, but I do think it is slightly out of place on the American Rubber Soul, just a little bit, in terms of the flow. That's probably the one song where I would probably have to just, you know, agree, where it just does fit better on the UK Help.
Okay. We talked a little about If I Needed Someone. The other three tracks, Drive My Car, Nowhere Man, What Goes On. Al, I mean, could you see any of those three songs on this US album, or do you think, you know, the songs that were presented to you at that time, I mean, do you think, you know, it worked? Or, I mean, you know, now, you know, learning the UK albums later on, what were your feelings between the two once you discovered the UK version?
Well, obviously, and I think Ethan mentioned this before, that if you trade it off, Think for Yourself for If I Needed Someone, I think that would have fit perfectly.
Right.
You know, I agree. No question about it.
Right. I agree. Andy, I mean, because then what, I mean, the funny thing is all the songs that we've done from 65, you know, that we didn't get until 66, that you guys didn't get till 66 with Yesterday and Today. I mean, Yesterday was a track that you guys didn't get until Yesterday and Today, right?
66? Well, it was a single.
Well, yeah, Yesterday
it had already been a single. Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. Gotcha. So, Andy, growing up then, you know, you spent many years with the two albums. Okay.
Yeah.
Moment of truth here. You want to hear Rubber Soul right now. Are you playing the US or are you playing the UK?
Probably the UK.
Okay.
Just because at the end of the day, that's the album that the Beatles made. And that's the way that they programmed it, and the way that they wanted it made and presented, and at the end of the day, it has their stamp on it, and it's the way they wanted it to be made and heard and appreciated. You know, there's all variations of Beatle albums all over the world in all different formats and markets, but at the end of the day, that's their record and that's what they made. For selfish reasons, I might listen to Rubber Soul for a little bit, but you know, right now, tomorrow, I'd put the UK one on. I would.
Okay. Ethan?
Can I just say something before I forget? Because we didn't really touch on Nowhere Man too much.
Well, we're gonna get to Nowhere Man in a minute. Yeah.
Okay. I'll say my piece on Nowhere Man now. Again, I think it was, if they were really trying to do a folk rock album, I think it was quite a mistake leaving off Nowhere Man. Because lyrically, it's one of the more, I think it might be the folkiest song lyric wise on the record, and it's one of the Beatles' strongest songs.
Good point.
I agree.
Absolutely.
L, I mean, we talk about Nowhere Man. In fact, that you know, it was a single, right? But I mean, that wasn't until 66. Right. I want to know with you, Al, when do you recall, because your group, I mean, your first generation fans, right? You're listening to all these US albums first, and to you, this is what it is. I mean, it's etched upon your brain, right? I mean, you know what's coming. You know what's coming after the word. You know what's Michelle. I mean, you probably know this album backwards and forwards and back again. So, getting the UK album, I mean, how does that mess with your mind? I mean, do you still feel like the US? I don't know why I shouldn't say still, but I mean, how do you feel about the difference between the US and the UK and your listening habits? I mean, would do you prefer the US over the UK?
Well, of course, I can. In this day and age of Spotify and all, you can cheat, and you can go on to Spotify and make a super Rubber Soul album by just tacking on the four other, you know, make a playlist and tack on the four other songs.
Right. Well, they wouldn't fit. There was plenty of room.
Easily. You know, of course, with playlists, they're infinite time-wise. So it doesn't matter. So I would probably cheat in that respect. But otherwise, if I had to choose, that's tough.
Yeah,
that is
very.
It really is.
Yeah, you know, I probably didn't listen to the in context the UK Rubber Soul until really probably the early 70s when imports, you know, became more available. Because in those days, in 65, it was very difficult to get
Could UK you have imports. Though? Could you have gotten a UK import in the 60s?
Yeah, probably if I had gone into Greenwich Village. And you know, there were some, you know, stores there, you know, the House of Oldies, Village Oldies, places like that, you know, and a couple of others that I'm not thinking of the names of. But I would have had to pay what was in that time, would have had to pay through the nose for it.
Yeah,
you probably would have had an easier time importing the British album in Canada. Because by like late 65, six or mid 65, I know that off the top of my head because I've been working with a fellow Canadian on a project.
Mm-hmm.
You could get albums like, off the top of my head, The Beatles' Greatest from Germany.
Yeah,
that was imported through the capital of Canada. And I think most of the British releases you could find in some capacity in Canada by 65, 66.
Mm.
That would have been a hell of a lot easier. Yeah.
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 Yeah. You just touched upon it, Ethan. And I want to bring it up, you know, Nowhere Man. For me, I think is one of John's strongest. Strongest songs. I've always loved it, and you know, I love it in Yellow Submarine as well. So you know, if I'm you, Al, and you know, and then I hear later on, a few years later, I hear Rubber Soul and then I hear Nowhere Man, I'm going to myself, wow, you know, what a track. But then you would have already heard it But putting it on the album, it gives the album a completely different feel than what you're used to, I'm sure.
Right. And I had only heard it, again, probably the one time, but it made such an impression on me with that first listen that when the single came out in February, I couldn't get enough of it. In fact, you know, when people, I don't really go in for, frankly, I don't really go in for the ranking stuff that that you guys do. So when people ask me, like, you know, what are my, you know, what's my favorite Beatles songs? You know, usually I just say, well, it with no alphabet, in no, you know, in no order, that Nowhere Man is always in the top five. It's oh. I, you know, it's just it's such a great song. It's yeah, you right.
He's not lying. If memory serves me correct, right. When I had Al on my show, Fans on the Run.
Yes.
Streaming,
right.
I think you picked Nowhere Man.
I think I gave you like five, and said that in no particular order, but that's always in there. No question about it.
Yeah, you know, like you, Al. I mean, I'm. You know, I'm with the UK one. I mean, that's the one that's, you know, in my brain. That's the one I can't forget the track listing. It's there. I mean, I know what's coming after You Won't See Me. I know,
right.
You know, Run For Your Life. You know, I mean, it's just, for me, it's more powerful album because of, you know, tracks like, you know, Nowhere Man being on there. And you know, and If I Needed Someone Too, I think is a really strong George track. I think is one of his better songs, you know, mm-hmm. up to that time. And, you know, What Goes On is okay, but I like the energy of Drive My Car as well. And I mean, it's a fun one to see him do live as well. But for me, I got to go with the UK copy of or version of Rubber Soul. So, I mean, everybody watching, let us know in the comment section which one do you prefer. I mean, but go ahead, Andy.
I was going to say, Nowhere Man is the one song for me that puts the UK over the US for me now, because you just can't. That's the song that puts it over the edge. You got Nowhere Man. You Won't See Me in Nowhere Man back to back. I mean, come on. Right. That is like that. I mean, it's a home run, and that's a great. And Al, I could see easily why Al chose it as one of his favorite songs, because it is. It's Use in Yellow Submarine. Yeah. It's John introspective. Yeah. You know, kind of more along the line of that kind of self reflection. Help, Nowhere Man. That all that kind of stuff is still continuing in his songwriting at this stage, and it's performed. Mm. Just awesomely, not so much live in Munich, but they did it nonetheless.
And then, you know, that the when you mentioned Yellow Submarine, the version, the remixed version that's on the Yellow Submarine soundtrack is right. Wonderful.
That was hearing that remix in '99 was pretty like that was the first time. That was way before all this new stuff now with the was a big deal back then.
I don't think it's a controversial opinion among Beatle fans that in terms of remixes of Beatle songs, if there's a Giles Martin remix of a song, but that song was also on Yellow Submarine soundtrack, most people would go to the Yellow Submarine song track remix.
Because
I don't know why. It just sounds more Beatle-y. Sounds less artificial.
Yeah.
I just say something real quick about the... Tom, you were going to continue about Nowhere Man?
No, this is something different.
It's unrelated. No. But can I just say, one of the coolest things, and I'm sure Al as a first gen can appreciate this, but I remember as a kid looking at the cover and I thought it was so cool to look at the back and get the breakdown of who is doing what. John with Paul, John and Paul, John, like that was the first time on a Beatle record you saw, you know, John, Paul on piano, George Martin on harmonium, like some really cool detail, because liner notes, as we know, were kind of not a real big thing back then. You got a sleeve note if you were lucky. But to see that kind of detail, even in its barest form, was like so, like, because again, it was such an event to hold the record and study every single note you know, even the liner that the record came in. What other records were being promoted, you know?
Well, it's funny you mention it because I'm just looking at the back, and we're going to have a guest later on this month. Now that I see this, I can't wait to, you know.
Yeah.
So you go on to You Won't See Me, and then it says Oregon Evans on Hammond, and that's on the U.S. But then on the U.K., you see Mel Oregon Evans on Hammond.
Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting.
So little things like that, Ethan. Ethan is such a knowledge of all the different variations.
Yeah.
Tell us all about.
I also have to chime in, please. Not just as a record nerd, but as a graphic designer.
Yeah.
In every way, I think the back cover of the UK Rubber Soul is better. Even though it's not too different, I mean, I think the photos are all in the same order. The US one looks a little kind of blown out, a little dark. But I really am not a fan of this big kind of bold Egyptian type face.
No.
Saying the Beatles. I much prefer the kind of subdued.
Yeah.
But that was the order of the day.
Jump in there for one second. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry, Ethan. Go ahead.
The U.S. Capitol graphic designers are not remembered for their subtlety.
Yeah.
Mm.
Very true. And I got to chime in about the front cover.
Yeah, please. I was just going to ask you about it. I was just going to ask you.
Because I can, if I'm not mistaken, that was probably one of the first occasions where a new album by a major band or a major artist right. had no reference to the name of the artist on the cover. Plus that, you know, that very ingenious, is it Robert Freeman?
Robert Freeman.
Yeah. His photo. And I mean, that's just because when I mentioned earlier about going into the store in Hackensack and seeing the album. And I mean, it would just hit me right in the face.
And it was a happy mistake. Yeah. I love that story in the anthology. Yeah. Of Paul, where it was
the epitome of the,
Can we have that? Yeah.
The projection on the album slick and then it slid down.
Yeah.
I love that.
Graphic design geek question for you, sir.
Yes.
Why does the American Rubber Soul have the brownish tint and then the UK one has the more orangey one?
I have no clue.
I thought you would know.
See, I'm not sure if it was like they ran it through focus groups or if it was some designer at Capitol. It's like, you know what? I'm a big fan of poop brown.
These are the major geek questions here, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't think the kind of greenish brown works as good as the bold kind of burnt orange.
What's your? Here's a question we haven't asked yet. What's your all go-to preferred version, mono or stereo?
Al?
Boy, because I didn't get my first stereo until about 1970. So I was listening to all those albums in mono, including Sgt. Pepper. But had, you know, once I did finally get the stereo and listen to it, that's an album that that's one they should listen to in stereo.
I agree. Though I do like listening to the mono. I mean, as I'm enjoying the, or when I every once in a while I'll grab one of the mono CDs and throw it in the car. I have no problem with them. I just, think the stereo just, has a little bit more, oomph to them, and I just like the separation and they just, but go ahead, Andy.
Well, I wanted to hear Ethan's answer and then I'll chime back in.
Well, technically there's also, when you're talking about mono and stereo, there's a secret third option that kind of only the nerds are aware of. And that's when the Beatles were coming to CD in 87. George Martin remixed both Help and Rubber Soul.
Yes.
And so there's slightly different stereo mixes. And the proper one only actually came out in Canada by accident, because the CD or EMI Canada provided the wrong tapes to the pressing plants. So the true 1965 stereo mix are on some of the early Canadian Rubber Soul CDs. And the original mixes didn't really come out proper till 2009, when they were the bonus at the end of the mono CDs.
Right. I do remember that. When I was going to say about... Go ahead, Ethan.
Okay. Well, actually, no, you go ahead.
Tom was talking about the mono, and he just feels that the stereo has more oomph. Yeah. You've got to remember that, you know, the mono recordings, and listen, I wasn't alive for this, but Al can attest to it. These, when it was mono, they were being made to be played on transistor radios, kids listening to on the beach, through one little small portable speaker. So the mono would have packed a more punch. You know, if a family had a hi-fi stereo in the growing up in the 60s, where it was the one speaker, you know, the one of those big furniture cabinet records, you're going to hear the mono. It's going to have a little bit more of a punch because it's only coming through one speaker, a smaller one. So especially back in the 60s when it was not, it was, you know, even your car stereos now are 5.1 and great. So I could see why you want a stereo sounds better now than a mono on a modern system. Is that fair to say, Al?
Absolutely. That's why, you know, that's why Phil Spector mixed all of his records, you know, as if they would be heard. And I think they did this in Motown as well, you know, with the perspective of their being listened to on a little 3-inch speaker, or, you know, in a speaker in a car radio or whatever. You know, as far as I'm concerned, an album like Meet the Beatles should absolutely be listened to only in mono. Right.
Okay.
I would kind of like to throw in another little anecdote from the time. The mono, it's funny you bring up the mono having more punch, because when the album first came out, if you were living in England and you bought the mono record, it almost had too much punch. And so the first run on Parlophone, they're what's called the loud cut. And so, you know, everything was just a bit hotter and louder. And I think it was causing, you know, people in their, you know, cheap little record players that they were meant to be played on, the needle kept jumping.
Right.
And so they had to...
Right. It's interesting to think about that, because I mean, I would have never thought about, you know, the one speaker thing, you know, Andy, and Al talking about that thing, you know, talking about the mono thing. I mean,
that's why a lot of purists will say that's how they heard it. That's how they exposed it. You're listening to on 2009 mono on a 5.1 surround system. You're going to go, this is okay, but give me the stereo. So it's all with the technology at the time.
See, when it comes to mono and stereo for me, I tend to, for Rubber Soul, I tend to go for the mono, because some of the stereo mixes on Rubber Soul are quite good. However, some of them are really bad, in my opinion. It's like, you know, there's tambourine and, you know, hand claps in one ear, and then everything else in the other ear. And it's incredibly off balance, that nothing was centered properly. Okay. But, you know, that's why they're going back.
Hey, well, Giles will fix that, because in December we're going to get a new one.
let's end with this. Al, just because these two albums are so unique, if, you know, let's say we do get a Rubber Soul box set by the end of the year, should they also include the U.S. In the version in this set?
Well, you know, as Ethan was just saying, you know, there are all these different mixes, and so I would say so. Yeah, I don't know if we'll get it, But I would say, you know, probably, yeah, the US mono and US stereo and the UK, at least the, you know, I guess the official UK mono and stereo.
Well, I could see the US stuff being included for, you know, any songs that had unique mixes
I wonder if
when
they're
they
going
all,
to
you know.
include George's 1987 mixes too. I would hope they would include those.
I don't think they would do the full US Rubber Soul, but I could see them doing whatever tracks had different unique mixes at the time, and then the tracks that were on the US Rubber Soul that weren't on the UK. I could see that.
Right,
And I
well,
also didn't say whether I prefer the US or the UK.
oh, well, drum roll, please.
Shocker. The British I prefer, because while the American Rubber Soul is a great listen, it's you know, it's I feel like it's kind of great in spite of itself, because the circumstances were kind of less than ideal of all the Capitol albums kind of cannibalizing each other and taking bits from that, and you know, bits left over go to that. I feel like if you're listening to, you know, the UK trio of Help, Rubber Soul, and Revolver, you're getting a better listening experience
Oh,
because all the
very
tracks
fair.
are where they're supposed
Yeah,
to be.
I can see that,
okay.
sure.
All right, cool.
So, is it a
Well,
clean
go ahead.
sweep for 4-0 UK now? Are we all going for?
I still
Al and I are
haven't
like,
made
Al and
I
I are
still haven't
like,
made a commitment.
yeah.
It's
All right.
okay, Al, if you want to go US, it's okay, you know, it's okay.
Now, in lieu of the, you know, the Super Rubber Soul playlist,
Right.
I'll go with the because I probably have over the years, especially once it became available as an import, I probably have listened to the UK one, if only
Okay.
because Nowhere Man's on it.
There you go.
Right. There
I
you
bet
go.
you Glenn or Giles Martin is listening to this right now, hearing about Owl's Super Rubber Soul and
Super Rubber Soul.
just
Let's hope so.
frantically taking notes.
Yeah.
Very good. I love it. All right.
Super Rubber
Up to
Soul.
you. It's up to you out there. Let us know in the comment section. UK, US. If you're in the UK and you didn't hear the US until later on, I want to know your thoughts on the US and then and vice versa. If you're still stuck on the UK and you're listening and you want to, you know, I'm sorry, US. If you're still stuck on the US here in the US, you know, give us your thoughts. Why do you like the US version better than the UK? We would love to we'd love to hear your thoughts. Al, I know you're a busy man. I know you're working on books. I know you're working on Beatle fan. I mean, talk about what you're doing these days.
Well, let's see. The new, in fact, I just finished literally minutes ago. I finished a piece on actually the 45th anniversary of the Ruggles,
Oh.
because a couple of weeks back was the 45th anniversary of the All You Need Is Cash TV special. So I do kind of like a history type of piece on the Ruggles
Okay.
that'll be in the next Beatle Fan, and the new issue is out as well. Also, I just finished two chapters for Bruce Beiser's next Beatles album series book, which will be on the Please Please Me and with the Beatles albums,
Okay.
and I've also got two chapters in the Rubber Soul Revolver book
Right.
as
Very
well,
cool.
and doing other stuff to keep myself out of
Okay.
trouble.
Very. Will you be at the Chicago Fest this year?
Yes. Yeah, I
Okay.
will be at Chicago, and I'm sure Ethan will be there. And are just one of you or both?
Well, yeah.
That's to be determined.
Probably
Yeah,
just one.
it's probably to determine because I don't want to go into why I'm not going, but
Yeah.
I'll be doing something, or my wife and I will be doing something that will prevent me from going anyways. So, but Ethan, what do you got going on, my friend?
Well, I'm kind of in between things because as it is apparent, I'm young. I'm in college. I just finished my semester. I'm kind of trying to figure out what I want to do for the next few months going forward with the show. I am working on some projects that I'm not sure I'm allowed to share too much about so far. But I'm working on some cool stuff with a really cool guy, and you know, stay tuned.
Very good, very good. Well, look forward to any more episodes of Fan on the Run if you choose to do more.
Beware.
Oh boy, what's coming?
Yeah, Andy, you have been incredibly busy the last week, and I just want to say congratulations to you because you, my friend, you took down the cocky Dylan Seavey, who was getting a little too, you know, his ego was getting a little too big there, you know, for winning 1 week at the Ken Michaels trivia show. But you showed him who was the boss, and congratulations.
Mere bag of shells. Come on, I could do it in my sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. Thank you. But thank you, Tom.
Don't worry, Dylan. We still love you.
We do.
Yeah. Exactly. So, but go over to Ken Michaels Radio YouTube channel and you can see, you see that. And then plus, I mean, have you guys scheduled, the next episode?
Not yet, but it's probably in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. Fair enough. And then you've also had a lot of yes content on your other leg, YouTube channel.
My own show, my own podcast. Yeah. The other leg. I went to two John Anderson concerts recently with the Band Geeks, and he was doing all the classic Yes material, and it was phenomenal. And in kind of after all that show, I kind of met up with the drummer of that tribute band, who I interviewed him, Joe Cass. But the one I recently just did and posted, what I'm really proud of, was an interview with a podcaster and author, Kevin Mulrine. And Kevin wrote a book, one whole book, on the 1978 album Tormato, believe it or not, which is really surprising. And I interviewed him for about an hour on Sunday, and it's up on my channel, and he's got a book coming out all about the album, recording details, instruments, gear, and stuff like that. So it's doing very well, and he's promoted it, and I'm really proud that I was able to get Kevin to do that. So, yeah, that's I like doing all the outside Beatles and Paul stuff on that channel, Dylan, Who, Genesis, all that stuff on that, and that's what I've been up to.
Al, did you ever tip your toe into the prog rock scene growing up?
Oh, sure. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Because back in the in the early 70s, when you know a station like WNAW-FM in New York was free form, a lot of the not jocks but the air personalities would play a lot of like the Yes album plus and Close to the Edge albums like that, plus I was working in retail in those days.
So
I had to be somewhat at least somewhat up on prog rock.
Not big into it, but you were aware of it.
Exactly.
Okay, very cool. For my other show, Talk More Talk, we just did our latest episode last week, and that was on the 50th anniversary for Red Rose Speedway. That was a lot of fun talking about that. Coming up, I believe, on the 15th, we've got a special show that we've been wanting to do for a while now, and it's pretty much the sum. Are the sum greater than the parts? And we're going to have an interesting conversation on, do the parts kind of live up to the sum? Is there any tracks that we feel that are equal to the sum? So it'll be interesting to hear everybody's thoughts on that. And then later on down the line, we'll be doing a 50th anniversary to Living in the Material World, which we all know is Ken Michaels' favorite album of all time. So that should be... That should be interesting as well. So, again, don't forget, Andy talked about the buttons earlier. You guys can email us about shirt as well, because we'll get an order for that as soon as we get some more orders coming in for that. Email us at twolegspodcast@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Two Legs Podcast. Please check out our YouTube channel. If you're listening to the audio version of this, check out our YouTube channel. Please subscribe as we're trying to get to 2K subscribers by the end of the year. And yes, we will have a giveaway when that happens. So Andy, Ethan, Al, I'm Tom. It was great hanging out with you guys talking about these two albums, and I cannot wait to hear all of your thoughts in the comments section, everybody. So, as always, have a great day and a beautiful night. Take care, everyone.
Listening to Two Legs, a Paul McCartney podcast, hosted by Tom Hunyadi and Andy Nichols, with musical contributions by Dylan C.